Richard Clark served in U.S. government for 30 years, including as White House counterterrorism coordinator under Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. He became the first White House official placed in charge of U.S. cybersecurity policy. His new book is The Fifth Domain, Defending Our Country, Our Companies, and Ourselves in the Age of Cyber Threats. The book is published by Penguin Books, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Richard Clark back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. A great pleasure.
Good to be back.
Let us talk about cyber threats. We certainly have learned a lot, although in reading your book, there's still a lot that we, at least the general public, doesn't know about this. What was your aim with the book to try to correct that problem?
Well, you know, 10 years ago, Joe, we wrote a book, Rob Kanocki and I, called Cyber War, in which we said hackers were going to be replaced by militaries, Russian, Chinese, other militaries. And we were right about that. We were wrong, however, 10 years ago, when we said American companies won't be able to defend themselves. What we discovered in the research for the book, the new book, The Fifth Domain, is that there are American companies using existing technologies that are resilient, that are able to stop attacks or at least stop them from having any really serious effects. Not all companies, but some companies are achieving it. And one of the big messages we wanted to get across in the book is your company can do it too. If you pay attention, you get the governance model right, you create a culture of security in the company, and you spend enough money to buy the new technologies and keep it current.
So, a couple things. First of all, the fifth domain being, that's a Pentagon term, right? We think of land, we think of sea, we think of air, we think of space, and now we think of this fifth domain, cyberspace.
That's right. The Pentagon calls domains places where they have to fight. And so they think they have to fight, obviously, on land, sea, air, and potentially in outer space. Now the Pentagon is saying there's a fifth domain where we may have to fight. In fact, we already are fighting, and that is cyberspace. The difference is that cyberspace is made by humans. The other domains are naturally occurring. So we ought to be able to do something in the domain that we've created to prevent war. But so far, we're fighting war there already.
And you believe in this book that you think that it's safe to conclude that the next major war that this country enters will be provoked by a cyber attack.
I think it'll start there. You know, people think it's safer to fight in cyberspace and somehow okay to fight a war in cyberspace. President Trump canceled a missile and bombing attack on Iran that was just about to happen, and said, no, don't do that. Just do a cyber attack. I think that's typical of most leaders around the world. They think cyber attacks are safer. They don't kill anybody. Nothing blows up, although, in fact, you can blow things up with cyber attacks. And so I think that leaders will be tempted to do that. But these cyber wars won't stay there. They won't stay in cyberspace. The Israelis recently blew up the Hamas cyber headquarters. They bombed it with F-16s. They said, we're being attacked in cyberspace from this building. We're not going to just fight in cyberspace. To heck with that. And they blew up the building. And the Pentagon's own public policy is that if the United States is hit by a crippling cyber attack from another country, we're not just going to respond with a cyber attack in kind. We will reserve the right to respond with missiles and bombs.
And the country most likely to launch a cyber attack against this country would be who?
Today, Iran. If we're talking about this very day.
Yes.
Because we launched one against them rather recently and admitted it publicly. And so we're sitting here waiting for the retaliation, and it will come.
Should we not have admitted it publicly?
I think there are two sides to that argument. the president had to say something about how he was retaliating for the fact that they shot down one of our drones. I think he would have looked bad in his own eyes if he had done nothing. But it does, you know, none of these attacks occur in a vacuum. There's always a tit-for-tat retaliation, counter-retaliation, and it spirals on up. I was going to say North Korea, you know, is sort of attacking every day. The North Korean government steals money through cyber attack in order to fund the government.
And then, of course, we get to Russia.
And then there's Russia. And according to the head of U.S. intelligence, Dan Coats, who publicly testified in March, the Russians have hacked their way into our power grid and could conceivably not only shut the lights out, but blow up transformers and generators. Now, they're not going to do that because it's Tuesday. They're going to do it someday when there's a period of tension between us and them. But recently, the White House leaked that we're also in the controls of their power grid. I think this creates a period of crisis instability, because if we get into a period of tension, there's a real incentive to go first. And that's not good.
So how should we look at the relationship that the administration has, certainly the president is having, with the leaders of Russia, the leader of North Korea, when it comes to these issues? And does that keep us safer, or does that exacerbate the problem?
Well, the president met recently with President Putin from Russia. And during the press conference, one of the reporters said, "Did you tell Putin not to hack our election again?" And clearly the president hadn't done that. So in front of the reporters, he wagged his finger, laughing as he did, you know, "Vladimir, don't hack our elections again." It's not a laughing matter. They did affect our election last time in many ways, and they'll do it again. And rather than joking about it, the president ought to have said to Putin, knock it off now, and if you do try it, there will be very severe consequences.
It seems that the people, and correct me where I'm wrong here, but it seems that the people who know what they're doing, cybersecurity experts, the people who are dealing with this every day, the people like yourself, everyone perhaps sees the problem with the exception of the president.
Well, you know, who knows what the president sees? What I do know is the president is apparently telling Mitch McConnell, his Republican leader in the Senate, to stop any money, any new money, going to the states and counties to make the election commissions more secure. Money has passed the House, but it can't get to the Senate floor. If it could get to the Senate floor, it would pass, because Republicans and Democrats support it. But probably at the White House's direction, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, is holding up that money.
So when it comes to cyber policy discussions, what are the right things that we should be doing? Because it seems like you can get behind, fall behind very, very quickly.
Well, corporations need to be spending a large amount of money, probably on the order of 8% or 10% of their IT budget. And they need to do that every year. Because the technology is constantly changing, the threats are constantly changing, and the defenses have to catch up. It's expensive, but it can be done. It's not impossible, and it's far more expensive to be hit by a cyber attack, as Equifax recently found out when they had to pay a huge fine for having lost all sorts of personal data of people.
When it comes to looking at it as a field of war, there's no end, right? I mean, there's nothing that can, as long as there is technology, as long as these things still exist, there is always a threat, but you can certainly minimize it.
You can, and if we could get people who are creating things that work on the internet, the so-called Internet of Things, if we could get these developers to think about security from the beginning, develop security built into the product, you know, they tend not to. If we get them to think that way, we can reduce the problem in the future. Because no matter what the product is, there will be someone with evil intentions, someone with a malicious criminal attitude, who will try to figure out, well, how can I use that? How can I take advantage of that? How can I make that do something it was not intended to do? And that's a problem. It's a problem today in hospitals, where we're hooking up devices to the internet. It's going to be a problem with autonomous cars. It's going to be a problem with all sorts of things that are connected on the new 5G network. So for the foreseeable future, it will be a problem. And it's something that everybody has to pay attention to, every company, every government agency.
So in my last question to you, in the moment that I have left with you, is there a sense that we can, given that we are all so giving on the internet, we're learning lessons, and yet we are still using it regularly. How do you think the average American should know about their own vulnerabilities?
Well, we go through about 12 things that everybody should do to defend themselves in the book. And I'll give you one example. Don't use the same password over and over again on different accounts. Don't have a simple password. And you say, well, I can't remember that many complex passwords. Right.
Yes, right.
So spend $20, get a password manager, a little application. It will generate really complex passwords for you. It will type them in whenever you log in. They will all be different, and it will sync up your passwords on all of your devices. That will improve your security enormously.
The name of the book is The Fifth Domain, Defending Our Country, Our Companies, and Ourselves in the Age of Cyber Threats. The book is published by Penguin Press. Richard Clark, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Again, The Fifth Domain is the name of the book. Richard Clark is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.